Welcome to Talk the Dog, the show where we find a bone to pick and a take to give. These are not hot takes. These is dog takes. Can I talk that dog? Let's shut up and grasp the tape.
That alibi ain't as tight as he thinks it is.
You know, weird that you would know the distance between you and a place where a crime took place.
Also, 600 miles in a day, just get you some gummy, just get you some kitty kitty, and you'd be all right.
That video cracks me up.
Did you use roller dogs? You little kitty kitty.
Hell,
some
we
gummy bears. You have no idea what we're talking about.
We do that once a weekend in the college football season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's it. Those are our gas station trips right there.
Pretty much, dude.
Welcome into the local hour. We got a whole another hour for you guys, and it is absolutely slam-packed. We had a hell of news this weekend. On the Georgia front, Georgia makes several staffing moves and changes and additions. We watched Gunnar Stockton today. I gave you my rundown. You would already have the film study, but, you know, apparently graphics had some, like, road trip or something today. So The people got lives outside of our content creation, believe it or not.
Shouldn't be making graphics while driving, probably, so...
Sound advice.
Way to be safe.
Sound advice from Jonathan. Do so it. We'll have a Gunnar Stockton film study, thinking right after tonight's live study.
10:01
Little nightcap.
Live stream. Yeah, a little nightcap. A little 10 o'clock upload for you guys on that. But we'll get none other than Jonathan Williams' thoughts on those film studies today. We'll also talk about where he ranks on returning starters in the SEC. We're also going to do some pocket watching today, which I love to do. But... let's start with the news. Hit that thumbs up button. A lot of news. What news you want first?
I mean, just pick any one of the hiring.
Larry Knight.
Yeah.
Larry Knight. Going to be announced, I would imagine, sometime soon as outside linebackers coach.
Hearing reports from some places that is already
getting
official.
Getting it done.
Yeah.
It's getting like, it done.
It's happening now. It's not official that he's been hired or signed. I don't know if he signed yet, but that will happen.
Haven't gotten the graphic yet.
Yeah, tough day for Rich Rod, to be honest with you. Rich Rodriguez hired my man Larry Knight January of 2026 to be his outside linebackers coach.
Think he stole one.
Probably thought he got a good one.
We might be getting a Shane Beamer press conference of.
I hope so.
We got someone better anyway.
We got somebody better. That was a great Shane Beamer press conference. That James Coley, sorry, sack. Don't worry. We got his signing bonus back, and honestly, hired someone better. Mm. Coach, why didn't you hire the guy in the first place? Don't worry about that.
Semantics.
Semantics. You know, just eating the chips. But anyways, hired my man Larry Knight. Was at West Virginia, or is it at West Virginia currently, but was at Arkansas State last year. Here's the important thing you need to know. 39 sacks as an outside linebacker group last year at Arkansas State. They had three of the top seven pass rushers in the conference a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Averaged 3 sacks per game. I believe finished 6th in the country in that category. So very strong performance from him.
He was at Georgia Tech from 2019 to 2022. I only tell you that because this is the second coaching staff member that they've stolen from that staff in that time period. Andrew Thacker, the former defensive coordinator.
And Crawford.
At Georgia Tech. Well, I'm talking about defensive minds. But yes, obviously Crawford as well. I don't know if Crawford was there in 2022. I think Crawford was at Western Kentucky at that time.
Okay.
But a lot of, hey, we like what he did over there. Mm-hmm. We observed it. We watched the room. We thought the room was really, really good. We respect his coaching. And Augusta, Georgia native.
And another thing to take note of his time at Georgia Tech, a player that many people will be familiar with was Luke Kennard, was a player for Georgia Tech during his time there. Obviously transferred to South Carolina, went on to win the Bronco Nagurski Award with the Gamecocks, but was very successful too and developed really well at Georgia Tech as well. And he was a big role in their defensive recruiting.
I would imagine he signed Romello Brinson.
Probably.
The guy that ended up transferring to Texas Tech and will now be a top 60 edge rusher. Or Romello Height, excuse me.
Romello Height.
Yep. He's a state of Georgia native.
Yeah, he's from Augusta. I mean,
the recruiting ties are going to go well with here. He's got experience at most of the major colleges that have football teams in this state. So it's a slam dunk hire.
I think the most important thing, and when we were asked about it when Uzo left for the Cowboys, it was like, our sources told us immediately, pass rush specialist. Kyle don't care where he's from. Don't care what he does. Don't care what he looks like. He better be a pass rush specialist. I thought it was no coincidence that that was the initial reporting. Matt Zenitz doesn't even say Georgia hiring outside linebackers coach. Georgia expected to hire pass rush specialist Larry Knight.
Yeah, I mean, I went back and looked at the statistics. They had 20 sacks this year. They were the worst in the SEC yet. And I know that, you know, Kirby Smart's thing on sacks, and there is some validity to that, but they did not get after the quarterback nearly enough last year, which makes sense as to why they have addressed this in the coaching hires.
And look, one thing I know about covering Georgia over these years and watching all these position coaching changes that they've had because of the amount of success that they've had is that we're going to find out what he likes really, really quickly. We learned this about Uzo. The moment Uzo got on campus, it was like, my God, if you're 6'5", 260 pounds, come play for me.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't recruit a single undersized kid. Also, if you're a Nigerian, I'm recruiting you.
Yep.
I'm recruiting you. We figured it out early on with Uzo. We're going to figure out what Larry Knight likes really, really quickly. I think that's – I don't know if it's unique to Georgia, but it seems to be unique to me when I talk to other DPPs, when I talk to other scouting people, when I talk to other coaches. Georgia gives not full autonomy, but Georgia gives a lot more autonomy to those position coaches to kind of cultivate the room than a lot of other schools get. Like, I can almost guarantee you that Jim Nagy decides what outside linebackers they recruit at Oklahoma. The outside linebackers coach does not. That's not the case at Georgia. Do you see what I'm saying? So we're going to find out what types of players he likes really, really quickly. Not only that, we're in an observation period right now. So I would imagine the moment he's hired, we're going to see him on the trail. We're going to see who he's recruiting.
Right. No, definitely.
And it's a huge class, too. Like, you want to talk about –
oh, dude, it's dude-laden. Class, yeah. It is dude-laden. That was one – look, this is going to sound like a negative thing about Uzo, but it is the reality, okay? Brandon Jacobs' recruiting just got a little bit more interesting because now you at least have a fresh voice going after him.
DJ Jacobs.
Did I say Brandon?
Yeah. We're all over the place with names today. I said Luke Kennard. I said Kyle Kennard. So
the DJ Jacobs thing, like, I'm not saying Uzo didn't do a good job, but this is a new job. It's a new person that might come in there and make an impact on that recruitment. I think that's important as well.
Fresh resume, too, of, like, you want to talk about elite pass rushers and having to recruit those guys. Well, here's a guy that just was at Arkansas State and was one of the best pass rushing units in the entire country.
By the way, they had three dudes that were in the top seven in their conference in pass rushing. I didn't watch every snap and every rep in Mobile. But have we heard about anybody from Arkansas State?
Mm-mm.
So he wasn't. It wasn't like he was doing it with dudes.
Right.
No. Is what I'm trying to get
at. Wasn't one of those Mike Green situations.
No, this ain't three Mike Greens, Jonathan. This is three guys in the top seven.
Yeah.
This is 36 sacks and three of them done by three guys. And I haven't heard about, hey, Texas A&M stole this freak out of Arkansas State. Hey, this kid from Arkansas State's dominating the Senior Bowl. Where did this guy come from? He was doing it with scheme and development is what it sounds like, and getting output from these guys. So that's an important thing to note there.
For sure. I think that most people should be satisfied with how this hire went out. Everybody should be satisfied.
I'm excited. And that's not a shot at Uzo Deribe at all.
It's one of those situations where you had a really good coach already, so you're figuring out who the next – like, you got a really good coach to replace him. So it's a win-win.
You have a really good coach, but you also now have a coach that's going to directly address your deficiencies.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, again, that's not an indictment on Uzo Deribe. For God's sakes, he just got a Dallas Cowboys job. So
I'll tell you this much. I think Trey Scott is more than equipped to absorb the defensive end room and just let this guy specifically train pass rushing. Like, I last year, I don't know how it was completely split up, but I do think there was some – you have the defensive end and the jack room sometimes because they kind of morphed.
Right.
Right? Like when early on when Malik Herring and Trayvon Walker was here, the defensive end body type looked totally different than Azeez Ojulari and Nolan Smith.
Right.
Now Gabe Harris and Quatavius Johnson look relatively similar. So I think there was some crossing over there. Now we can kind of separate the skill sets, not necessarily the positions, because the body types have morphed.
Right.
They don't look different than they used to. They used to look like two totally different humans.
And for a guy that appears to have great success when it comes to developing players, not a more pivotal time for a guy like that to walk into this room with the amount of young bodies that he has, guys that we talk about got to get 15% better. Like, that's what it's going to take this offseason. Like, that's a guy that clearly has the resume proven where he can do that. He can elevate these players.
Now, you mentioned it being a great hire, Kirby. You're extremely excited about it. I know one thing's for damn sure. You want to hype up the Georgia fan base about any football coach, tell them that you're about to hire an alumnus. Mm-hmm. And they going to go through the roof with that Q rating right there on the approval rating score.
An alumnus that played well.
Great. And that is Robert Edwards coming back. As an offensive analyst role, I have the exact name here. Player connections coordinator.
It's the role that David Hill had before he headed out.
By name, no. By name, he's the player connections coordinator. I'm pretty sure D Hill was the a quality control assistant dedicated to running backs. So by name, no, but by role, yes. He is the running back's assistant coach, is what he is. This was listed as the player's connections coordinator. And it was reported that this was made available because David Hill.
That's what D. Hill had on his David, UJ
really?
Staff.
Yeah, he was listed as the player's connection coordinator.
Well, all that role is you help recruiting, but you help in the running back room.
Mm, that's true.
That's what David did.
Yeah.
And no offense to D. Hill. D. Hill's great people. D. Hill's great while he was here. This is a unanimous upgrade in the name or in the name and Q rating score.
From the brand.
Nobody knew what David Hill was. Robert Edwards is a name. This matters to the common fan.
From the brand, for the common fan, it's an upgrade. We'll have to see if it's an upgrade when you get on field results or how the locker room feels about it, because at the end of the day, like, that's what's going to matter most. But from a name prestige, yes, this is a upgrade. Obviously, Robert Edwards was a very talented running back for Georgia in the mid-90s during the dark ages of that team, but had, I think, 900 yards in 97. So really solid running back. Has coached high school level football for
the last 18 years.
Yeah, the last 17 or 18 years. So has an ability to connect with young adults and young players. So it's not like it's just, you know, some guy that played 30 years ago hopping off the couch.
And look, if we didn't hire one of the Edwards brothers, we were going to riot at some point.
That's fair.
Just had to. Had to get one of them on staff.
Right. Understandable. So, no, I think it's a very exciting position, and I think it could work out extremely well for Georgia.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Have you heard the story about how his career basically ended?
No.
He had a really bad knee injury.
And do you know how?
No.
So, used to, Pro Bowl is kind of a big thing nowadays, or at least a talking point. Used to, they would have this, like, pro-am at the beach in Hawaii before the Pro Bowl, and they would have a bunch of NFL players play a game of flag football on the beach with a bunch of celebrities.
Oh, okay.
And he went up for a reception in this celebrity flag football game, hyperextended his knee terribly, completely ended his career.
Oof. I think he had 1 year with the Dolphins afterwards.
Yeah, but he was just not the same.
That sucks.
Yeah, man. It's a crazy freak injury. It had nothing to do with like a real football
that
event.
That sucks.
Yeah, man. So that was the day the Pro Bowl died, really. That's how I remember it. That was the day the Pro Bowl died. Get Hines Ward in here next. Who else? Davin Bellamy, hire him.
He gets added in now.
Who else?
I mean, Jarvis Jones continues to be discussed.
Got
to
get Jarvis back.
Mm-hmm. Terrence Edwards is always
Warren Erickson
around.
Already on the staff.
Sure is.
Maybe Stetson should retire and come back.
Oh, coach up some QBs.
Sonny. You need Sonny in the running back.
And then 5 years from now, Nolan Smith retires multi-Super Bowl head coach.
Yep. Okay. Nice and simple. They did hire another former Georgia.
Yeah, they hired Mo Smith.
Sure did.
He's been on the staff, by the way.
He has been.
Unofficially on the staff. Now he's officially on the staff. So.
Yeah, I think one of the funnier things and more recent, like, massive rule changes that nobody ever talks about was the off-field analyst role being removed, and now anybody can practice, anybody can coach, anybody can really be a position coach now. And now every play, everywhere I go, there's like, yeah, the offensive line's got 4 offensive line coaches over there. DB's got 17 guys over there. They're all on staff. It's like, what? Oh, yeah, got to bring Rennie Curran back. Mm. Got to get Rennie Curran. You know, Garrett Cox's job opened up an opportunity for Rennie Curran to come back. Have they filled that Cox role yet?
I don't know.
That was a bit of a stretch, honestly.
You think so?
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know if they –
because I had a note here. I think they're done with off-season additions. I don't think that would be the case now.
Well,
I think about the Cox role.
He was a defensive analyst, correct?
Correct. Specifically helping with the linebackers.
So, I mean, obviously, Mo Smith's not going to help with the linebackers, but he was upgraded to a defensive analyst position. So
maybe we filled that.
Maybe perhaps. That's the void being filled there, but okay. It's position difference. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, like you said, they could go out and add another guy if they wanted to.
Hmm. We good on that?
Yep.
Off-season additions. You love them. It's a solid coaching staff for another year here in Athens. Where y'all boys want to go next? Y'all want to talk about this Elijah Holyfield story?
Yeah, we can hit on that.
I think we need to talk about this.
Go ahead. Introduce it to the audience.
So, you know what, Jay? Well, why don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, Jay. Well, why don't you do this?
Why are you so forgiving to give me this opportunity to talk about the Elijah Holyfield story?
You wrote the article.
I did write the article. I wrote it this morning. You know, we all love good Kirby Smart stories, and especially when it comes
to
the
former
player. We
love great off-season content, too.
Yeah, that too. Whenever we get one of
these
little
nuggets. Few and far between. When you get one of these, you got to jump on it as an opportunity.
Yeah, so Elijah Holyfield was, I'm not sure which podcast it was, but he was on
a
podcast.
Had to be a WWE podcast.
Yeah, you would imagine so. That's what he's involved with right now, so you would imagine it's one of those. But he was talking about, now this is early Kirby Smart days, because Elijah Holyfield was a part of the 2016 recruiting class. First year, Kirby Smart as a head coach. So he decides to tell a story about one of his first like impressions of Kirby Smart at practice, and this is what he goes on to say. My first couple runs, I was kind of bouncing it out to the outside every single time. He was kind of getting upset about it. He's like, what, are you scared? He's like, are you soft? And those words to me are like, are you calling me a bitch? He then continues to say, I'm like, what do you mean? I'm sorry. I'm starting to get a little upset now. So the next run, I'm like, I'm just going to try to run over everybody. So I'm just in there just hitting people. And by the end, I've got like tears in my eyes and stuff. He comes back laughing and said, him being Kirby Smart, and said, you might beat their ass. You won't beat my ass. And walks away from me. And that's when I knew he's good.
What a crazy way to find out, like.
Bro, this is why Kirby is who he is, right? Because he challenges your manhood in front of everybody, literally to the point of you crying. And then he comes by you, gives you more shit, and you're like, you know what? That's why I love this
guy. That's my
guy. That's my guy. That's the moment I fell in love with him. Huh?
Stockholm syndrome.
Bro, this is the gift. I think he has this more than, like, Saban's career is what Saban's career is. But I do feel like everybody that ever worked for him, played for him, was around him, eventually reached a threshold of, I don't take that shit no more. And they would just go somewhere else. They would seek promotion elsewhere. They'd go to the NFL as fast as they humanly possibly could. They would talk afterwards about, damn, that sure was the hardest 3 or 4 years of my life, but man, I'm sure glad I got through it. That's the difference between Saban and Kirby in my mind, because everybody I've ever heard of that speaks about Kirby is like, man, that guy sure is an ass, but he's right. Mm-hmm. I probably should do what he's telling me, and I know it sounds really, really mean, and man, this quite possibly could be the most embarrassing moment of my life, but I sure am thankful. Like, it's such a unique trait that he has.
The art of the likable asshole is something that very few people ever master, but when you do master it, it's borderline untouchable at that point, because everything that's said about Kirby Smart of he's you know, hardcore, he's you know, abrasive, he's an ass, he does a lot of things, he's very stubborn, are all correct. But at the same point, if you ask any player, any coach, 99% of them will say one of my favorite players or coaches to ever work under would do it 10 times over again. So thankful to the opportunities that he's provided.
Like, it was so rare for a football coach to stay under Nick Saban so long that Kirby was the one.
Mm-hmm.
And he is notified as that guy. That guy stayed with that guy longer than anybody else. Kirby's got like 7 of those.
Yeah.
Todd's never left.
Nope.
Trey Scott's never
Glenn
left.
Schumann.
No.
Glenn Schumann's been here since 16.
Yeah, and
these guys don't leave this guy.
Right, and Kirby was at Bama for only like 7. I mean, Todd Hartley and those guys, and even Del McGee, they've all surpassed how long Kirby spent with Saban. So he's obviously doing something right.
Now, look, I'm not saying he's as great of a coach. I don't think there will be anybody that ever surmounts what Saban did from a winning championship standpoint, especially not in the era of college football that we have now, but – like, this is the guy that we associate with hard nose, always in your shit, never backing off, just irate all the time. And he doesn't have this like saturation point for him in his relationships. They all seem to rock with it.
It is funny to think about, like, would you, like, talking to like almost any former Georgia football player, if you would say, like, hey, tell me your favorite Kirby Smart story. Like, tell me a moment where Kirby Smart showed a lot of love to you.
You talking about, like, the Mike Griffith special?
And it's like, well, let me tell you about the time he degraded me in front of every one of my teammates. Yeah. Because that's when I knew that I love Kirby
Smart. Let me tell you about the time he called me a bitch in front of hundreds of my peers on a microphone.
And I'm going to do it with a smile on my face. And I love it so much.
Wait until I tell you about the time he questioned my manhood.
Yeah. The funniest part about all that, too, is like, these are the PR-approved, I've got a microphone in front of me stories. These aren't, oh, the cameras are off, no one's going to hear this. I'll tell you the fun ones.
Yeah.
So I want to hear those stories because I know that they're there.
I love Mike Griffith. I love when he asks that question every year at the Combine. Can't every wait to time. Hear it this time. Hey, man, everybody's got a great Kirby Smart microphone moment. What's yours? Well, this one time he called me up.
To be fair to Mike Griffith, though, that is the gift that keeps on giving.
Dude, it's content galore. Yeah. It's every single time.
The best.
Especially for those NFLB reporters that are like, wait, what?
Kirby does what?
Does what?
It's also a great opportunity because you got all these players that are like, I don't got to worry about Kirby Smart getting mad at me anymore.
No.
I'm airing it out.
What's he going to make me do, run laps?
Yeah, what's he going to do, punish me? Not hire me in 15 years when my career's over? Oh, no. It's not happening. So, yeah, it's fun.
It is so unique to him, though. Again, I don't know when I came up with or thought about this, but I think it was like a year or two ago I came in here. I was like, you know what he's great at? Being an asshole and a likable one.
Yeah.
All the time. And it's that thing that it's something human about him that makes everyone realize, oh, he's right. I bet his wife pushes him around, though. Who do you think wins arguments in that household?
I mean, you got to have somebody in your life that checks
somebody's
right?
Got to check you, right?
It's definitely
It's got to be Mary Beth.
It's Andrew.
You think it's Andrew?
Andrew.
Andrew doesn't even get the opportunity to win the argument.
No, there is no
it's
argument.
It's like, dude, get out of here.
I could see, and this is getting very behind this, I could see Andrew sitting in his room, playing on Xbox or something. Kirby walks in. I thought you told him to clean this room up. And he just goes, bro, shut up.
Yeah, no. I don't think that's how that's going down.
Kirby goes, okay, son.
There's always that one. You better be talented, son. I do want to see his collection of things he's stolen from SEC schools, though.
Oh, my God. Dude, they're probably just...
No, let's not air him out now. Let's not air the... Because he is underage. I don't want the kid going to juvie. But I would imagine it's pretty
I don't think he... I don't think he even gives them the... You know,
no proof.
Not even that. The honor of having like a trophy case of it. I bet half of them are just in the yard somewhere.
Just miscellaneous. Yeah,
it's a moldy football sitting in the yard.
He loses Vanderbilt footballs like I lose belts.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, yeah, I don't even remember what that one's from, but it's.
I think I gave it to the dogs.
Been under the, yeah. That's what he does, I think.
Yeah. That's a great point. We watched Gunner today.
Did you?
Watched Gunner.
Yeah. We're going to release it right after tonight's live show. And we're starting a new series, and we started it with Gunner because I didn't want to be labeled biased. I didn't want anybody thinking that I don't like their guy. And we went hard in the paint, and that's what this next series is about, right? It's about taking a look at a quarterback's worst game and figuring out why it went that way and how we can avoid making sure it goes that way ever again, right? Where do we get better? And I told Jonathan in the lead up to that film study today that I didn't feel like it would be fair to take like even his Auburn start because we were so early on in our career and so early on in the year that we really hadn't knocked the cobwebs off. So I thought the only game that you could really look at and say, hey, though you did not play bad, you did not play good enough because the other guy played great, and that was the Ole Miss game in the Sugar Bowl. So that's the one we looked at.
Mm-hmm. There were cobwebs knocked off in that Auburn game, though. Don't worry.
Yes, there were.
He knocks them off, and then he probably gets some back. That's how I would put it.
There's a little fogginess.
Which I think that's a great starting point for, you know, areas where we maybe want to see Gunnar Stockton improve ahead of this season. It actually isn't on my list, but I think we've all been in agreement that, like, at least lessening the amount of kill shots that we take. Because, you know, going back and watching the game, yeah, I mean, there's a couple plays where Gunnar Stockton just actually gets obliterated and drilled into the turf. But they're also the two of the biggest plays in the game, I would say. Mm-hmm. The two of those hits that he takes are two of the biggest games that either allowed Georgia to extend its lead at one point or continue a drive that was very pivotal in the game. So that's not my three, but I did boil it down to I think that there are three things that if we had to emphasize to Gunner this offseason of what I would want him to improve that I think would make him the best version of himself in 2026. It would, one, start with, let's trust the pocket a little more. You know, a great playmaker. I think he does a great job of, one, like, when he scrambles, I think he does it intentionally. Like, there's an intent to it. It's not just, I'm escaping out of the pocket, I'm trying to rush. Like, this guy gets lateral with the line of scrimmage, and he's trying to extend the play and find a shot for one of his teammates. So I think he does that well. But there's also moments where, hey, it's clean, and if you stay in the pocket, maybe we can deliver this strike down the field, and we pick up 15 yards instead of 4. So just kind of getting comfortable with that. The second one, and we talk about this one a lot, but it popped up a little bit today on the film that we watched, of just got to layer the football a little better. Maybe trust layering the football a little more. Maybe that's what I see, because we know he can do it. This was something that he kind of showcased in the middle of the season. It was something that we're like, we got to see more of this. And what do you know? Gunnar Stockton starts layering the football a little bit more. And we even saw where he has the arm slots. He's able to throw from sidearm. He's got the arm angles to do it. So that's not even an issue there. It's just more so we got to get more comfortable doing that. And we just got to get more reps doing that this offseason. And then I'm going to steal yours, Brooks, because I do think it's one of the biggest talking points that you'll take away from that film study of players, not plays. It's like watching Zachariah Branch run open quite a few times and some pivotal moments too. Like, we're talking about 3rd and 10, 2nd and 10, last drive of the game. Hey, if we trust Zachariah Branch here, like, if we had just trusted our players in that game, maybe Georgia ends up winning that game. Maybe we end up victorious. Just kind of like maybe going off of the initial design of the play and just kind of trusting your guys, because there's even a play there where Dylan Bell is wide open for a touchdown, but we decide to go a different way. And we pick up positive yards, and it looks like a good play, but we could have just took the top off the defense and scored a touchdown.
I do think there could be some year two growth in – understanding not what coach just called, but why coach called what he called. You know what I mean? Like, those plays where it is 3rd and 10, and yeah, it might be cool, we gotta go and we gotta whip and we gotta sail, and we might work it however we work it, but we're gonna work it different next year when we know, hey, coach is probably calling this because he wants Zachariah open and we think we can get him open.
Right.
Our coach is calling this because we think Talon's got an advantage here in this area of the field, so we're definitely going to read him first, even if it kind of tilts how we go through our progressions.
Right. Not every progression's the same.
Yeah.
And I think the best thing, though, about, like, the three things that I just mentioned is these are all fixable things. These are all things that you can fix throughout this offseason, or things that you just get better at with more reps. Like, the more amount of time that Gunnar spends in the pocket this offseason, he's going to get better at managing the pocket and feeling more comfortable there, or layering the football, or things like that. It's not like we're going into this offseason, we're like, oh boy, like we just got horrible mechanics. Like, I don't know if we're going to fix that. I don't know if we get that out of you after being in college for 4 years, or you just got a turnover problem, or you're just still not seeing it. It's not those things. It's all things that are, these are fixable things that are just going to happen with more reps, more than likely.
And to add to yours, they're fixable things that he's shown he's capable of doing. There were passes last year, like we talked about, where there were, oh my God, he layered that ball amazingly. There were times last year where he steps up in the pocket and delivers a strike. He trusts the pocket. There were times last year where he found the player and necessarily went off script and made that play that needed to be made. So it needs to happen a little bit more, and I think we all expect it to going into, like, he's only 15 starts into his career. Right. I know he's been in the system for a long time. I know that he's a veteran at this point, but as far as starts goes, very, very young, so to speak.
Would you really boil it down? Like, if we just had to pick one word for Gunnar, it would maybe just be trust, because, you know, we talk about, I don't want to just spoil the whole film stuff, but there's some moments where, like, we take two hitches instead of just the one. Well, yeah, and it's like, maybe we're not trusting it.
That's the thing I put on here that you left out, is the extra hitches were killer in that Ole Miss game. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't be taking them game 14.
Right.
Especially knowing, like, all the extra hitches were on predetermined reads.
Yeah.
Like, it's 3rd and 8. They've got meg coverage over there against Colby. We know we're throwing the comeback. Why are we taking an extra hitch?
Right.
We shouldn't. We should get to the top of our drop, take one hitch, and rip it. Or, hey, we're play action, okay? Deep play action. We got two posts working, all right? Read where the safety commits. By the time he commits, take a hitch and let it rip. Well, we take two hitches on a ball that's getting thrown 50 yards downfield. Well, now we're 5 or 6 yards late, essentially, because we've taken an extra hitch. And though it might only be a second, we got a guy moving 20 miles an hour downfield. So that changes where these things are. So those types of things I have to get cleaned up. And you would imagine, like you said, the good news about all this is all these things you would assume are improvable in the second year of you starting. You should eliminate a lot of that hitching when we get into a second year in the system.
Mm-hmm. Right. And again, from game 1 to game 14, very obviously a player that progressed throughout the year. So the again, he also proved that he can show improvements on things that need help with. Like, we talked about it all through the first three or four games of the season. Felt like there were way too many turndowns. Now, you could argue, and I didn't watch the film study, obviously.
It's there.
There were turndowns.
They're still there.
But there probably weren't as many if you go back and you watch the Marshall tape or you watch the Austin Peay tape or even the first Alabama game.
Oh, God, dude. The first month of the season, it was an unwillingness.
Yeah.
It wasn't even turndowns. It was an your eyes are there, and you are completely unwilling to pull it.
So when it comes, like, going back to the conversation about there are a few plays where we probably should have been throwing that to Zachariah, like, do you think it could be something as simple as, like, maybe we as an offensive staff need to change, like, our pre-snap operation of, like, maybe sometimes we need to say, all right, here's the play, but, hey, Gunner, this is really supposed to go here. I don't know. That's just a theory. I'm not
No, I can't say that.
Okay. I didn't mean to put you in a tough spot.
No. Ask me after the show what I was not allowed to say.
Okay.
And I'll tell you.
All right.
But there was something. There was an excuse I was given from this coaching staff that can't be. It can't be what the answer is.
Okay.
When I ask, why does this happen? And this is the response in 2026, cannot happen.
Okay. Can't be as in it's like it shouldn't happen, or can't be as in it's not possible to happen?
As in, we have parameters and things put in place to assure that does not ever happen.
Okay.
And it happened in a pivotal football game. No excuses. But I see chat talking about play calling. The only thing I will say about play calling that was obvious watching that Sugar Bowl back was the fact that they did not trust him on third and obvious. Mm-hmm. On third and obvious passing downs, they did not trust him. It was a lot of screen passes, a lot of handoffs to Cash Jones, a lot of it's third and 10, the ball's on our own 25, there's 52 seconds left in the first half, we have three timeouts, and we decide not to do anything with it. Now, some of that might be scarring from last year, mm-hmm. right?
In the Notre Dame game. 21-12.
Or the fact that we're up 21-12. But next year, in year two of starting, third and 10s cannot be punting possessions.
Yeah, and I think that you're probably right that the scarring was more from last year. In a two-game span, in the last 5 minutes of the first half, you lost your starting quarterback and basically lost the game because you had a scoop.
Oh, dude.
Pretty much a scoop.
Middle 8 and 24 cost you whatever you thought was supposed to be there.
Yep.
You know what I mean? The last 3 minutes or last 2 minutes of Texas, starting quarterbacks, UCL blows out. Last middle 8 against Notre Dame, you lose 17-0.
Yeah.
And you lose the game by 7. So, or 10 or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's 23 to.
I mean, it was. I'm with you. I understand. And I guarantee you, in that moment, Kirby was very aware of what his history in those 2 minutes had been. And maybe that's why he got conservative. And we could sit here and be hindsight with it. I'm just saying, second year starting with a quarterback that y'all went through the offseason committing to, by the way. Like, if you don't think Georgia could have been in on some of these transfer portal quarterbacks that got paid a lot of money and that a lot of people think are NFL football players, if you don't think Georgia could have been in the mix, you're sadly mistaken. They have chosen Gunner in 2026, and if you're doing that, and you are, he's got to show growth enough to trust him in those situations. That's all.
No doubt. No doubt about that.
So, where does he rank in terms of the returners in the SEC? Now, just to let you know, in my list, I included Sam Leavitt and Byron Brown because they are quarterbacks who I know are going to start and have starting experience. Does that make sense?
And will be starting in the same system.
Well, Leavitt, not so much. Byron, yes.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's what I was thinking for
Byron. I've heard people say that Kenny Dillingham's offense is similar to Lane Kiffin's. No, it is not.
No, it is not. No, that's not true.
My initial inclination is second. He's second or third for me.
I've got him third.
Behind who you got?
Trinidad at one and like clear cut, obvious one for me.
Understandable.
I don't even think there's a close two, but I have to do a two, and that's Arch Manning. And then I go Gunner, then I go Lenoris, then I go Leavitt, then I go Byron Brown and Mateer.
I would go Gunner over Arch. Arch, we get it, has the much higher ceiling. I think that's, you know, their draft projections would suggest that. Gunner was a way more consistent quarterback last year. And I understand that Texas's offensive line and their offensive schemes, and Arch was asked to do a lot more than he needed to. There were still very much moments last year where Arch was having, oh, you're in your first year starting, really, really bad mistakes. And Gunner had those too, but they weren't mistakes. They were more turndowns.
Those last six games, last five games, basically Oklahoma on, I was like, all right, that's the guy I signed up for. I don't know what the guy was prior to that, but that's the dude I signed up for moving forward.
I would just like, and I think you're, I agree with you of like, I have no issue if you want to put Arch Manning ahead of Gunnar Stockton and put him as the third best quarterback in the conference. But from like what I have today and what I know about both of those players today and what I watched from both of them last year, I would just have Gunnar Stockton at number two right now, ahead of Arch, slightly ahead of him, like very barely ahead of him.
I mean, Gunnar Stockton is a winner. And we don't know if Arch Manning has it. We know Arch Manning is going to be a really, really good quarterback, but what game last year where was it, hey, Arch, we need you to deliver and win us this game?
Mississippi State.
Okay.
Mississippi State, he was the reason they won the football game.
You're absolutely right on that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of which.
Well, until he was knocked out on the turf.
But he got them back in that
for
position.
Sure. Like, I mean, that was a 17-point comeback that had Brandon Walker crying.
I would say
it was all because of Arch Manning.
I would say Mississippi State and also Texas A&M. He played a huge role in them.
That's fair.
Shit, I didn't even put Marcel on this list of returners.
You had him in the show
he's
notes.
He's on the list.
Oh, I know he's on the list. I didn't even rank him.
Where would is Marcel Reed ahead of
I'd put Stockton? Him and like Mateer in the same
dude
category.
He's in this like there are five quarterbacks in the SEC four that I have no idea what to do. Five: Lenoris, Sam Leavitt, Byron Brown, Mateer, and Marcel Reed. Those guys are gonna have games where they go for 500 total yards and then games where you're like, my god, they scored 3 points against who?
I mean, they are boom or bust. Nuclear boom or
I don't think there's any way Sam Leavitt is anything but a tremendous success next year.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that goes into that system.
That dude is J.J. McCarthy from the sense that he's going to get somebody fired.
Oh, yeah.
He that, is going to get your sense, ass
yes.
fired.
He's nine.
So, and he's nine.
Yeah, I do wonder.
That's nine coming out.
I mean, the sporadicness does kind of fit in with what a Lane Kiffin offense is. I just wonder, was the sporadicness initially contributed to the fact that you're in a Lane Kiffin offense, or was it the fact that you're just a sporadic quarterback? Because let's be fair, Trinidad Chambliss wasn't really sporadic. Now, he had plenty.
Yeah, no, this is what I'm saying. I think what Sam looked like at Arizona State and what he's about to look like at LSU is going to look like Lane solved all these problems. But in reality, Lane and Charlie gave him all the answers before the play started. That's what it's going to be. And everybody's going to be like, oh, my God, look at this growth. And he's going to be a first-round draft pick, and he's going to get to the NFL and be a turnover machine. Mark my words. Nostradamus right here. Huh?
I could see it.
Still haven't gotten an answer, by the way. I'm going to say it until somebody tells me to stop saying it. Who is Gunnar Stockton's quarterback trainer? Can I get an answer?
Shall we ask AI?
Ask yes.
Better, you can ask the robots. I've asked people in the building.
Do they not give you an answer?
They got the secret sauce.
What's going on with the cameras? Is my vision going blurry or were the cameras?
I don't know.
I didn't notice anything.
Either way, still ain't got an answer. I know
sauce.
There's a lot of people listening, and I know when I say stuff that ain't supposed to be said, I get text messages like, So where y'all at?
Gunnar Stockton is up in Raven County right now with some unbeknownst QB trainer, and he's throwing footballs over mountains.
Let's just start making legends about Gunnar Stockton, like he's Paul Bunyan.
Ooh. I heard he's training with that guy on Instagram that does the spoof baseball trainer videos. He's like throwing those water bags and like jumping off of squat racks and just doing crazy shit. Yeah, that's who Gunner's training with. I heard he's training with that guy that holds the squat rack underneath the safety rack and has him jump up against the squat rack. I already got that.
Good God.
Somebody give me an answer there. I would like that at some point. Not that, you know, my ultimate success is relative to Gunnar Stockton's, but yours is in 2026. So that would be nice to know.
Here's a question before we
move. How much did Will Muschamp get paid?
No, I was gonna one more Gunnar Stockton before.
Please.
This time last year, if you could tell Brooks from 2025 last year, hey, these are the deficiencies Gunnar Stockton's gonna have, but he's also all of these things, would you have said, oh, sign me up? Or would you be, I don't know if he's the answer?
Honest to God, after 2023 and 2024, If you'd have just told me the type of leader he was, I'd have signed up for it. And I still will. I will not go back to covering football teams that don't execute and don't play hard and don't show up every single weekend. I will. I'll say that like I'd have an option, but I will not enjoy it. I will not enjoy it. No, I did not enjoy covering 2024. I did not.
I don't think most Georgia fans enjoyed that season.
And you know what's crazy? Same exact result. Same exact result.
But it felt different.
Same exact outcome.
It felt way different.
Minus one regular season loss.
And guess where else it felt different? Inside the building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they are going where they're going. So you wouldn't even – I honest to God, if you'd have gave me the outcome of his physical performances, I said, that checks out.
Okay.
Everything about – I mean, there's clips of me on Feinbaum saying this guy can't wear the football. At SEC Media Days.
Yeah.
Like, we knew what he was going to be. We knew what type of offense it was going – what I didn't know was – oh, my God, everybody's going to be willing to die today.
And so is he.
Because he is. Not because he – or so is he. Because he is.
Facts.
That's totally different. And I'm buying for all of that. Because I still, at my core, believe that this is a team football sport. This is a organizational sport. That on the NFL level, we can be individual excellent. And that's fine. We don't have to be the heart and soul of everything that we do. But in college football, somebody does. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to be the heart and soul of your championship. And I thought Fernando Mendoza was the heart and soul. I thought how he operated, how he moved at Indiana. Well, why both of y'all got that weird smile on your face?
I'm just at the point of the offseason now where I'm starting to get excited about Fernando Mendoza.
Oh, are you?
Oh, word?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, we got to go to the combine now.
My quarterback.
Is he going to throw?
Probably not. I wouldn't. But then again,
hey, I got some connects to Indiana. You want to go to their pro day?
That's a long trip.
Every time with this guy. Every time. Like, hey, I got a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Well, you know.
Once-in-a-lifetime?
Well, bro, I don't think that anybody has ever uttered the words once-in-a-lifetime and then followed that up with Bloomington, Indiana.
Bloomington, Indiana pro day. It's not like you said, hey.
You're going to look back. When they build the statue outside of that Las Vegas monstrosity, and they say, this is our greatest Raider of all time, and I'm going to call you, and I'm going to say, Kirby, they just unveiled the statue. You could have been at his pro day.
Yeah, but I was also at
– Pain and Regret is going to be out of this world at that point.
No, it won't, dude. I saw him at the combine, dude.
Well, I don't think he's going to be doing anything at the combine.
Yeah, I'll be in his presence.
We can get a Quate Mendoza right here on the flats. Go down there and check that out.
Nah, that's okay.
You ain't trying to see little bro? Little bro Doza?
Seems like a great dude, but
we'll eventually see him.
He's not gonna be my quarterback.
Hmm. Muschamp got paid.
He got very handsomely
Muschamp
paid.
Muschamp got a fat check. What was the
I can see why he went Muschamp. To Austin.
What was the finalities on this?
I think the final
is like 1.9, 2.3.
Oh, buddy.
You get 2.7?
2.7 starting with a $100,000 raise each year. Contract totals 8.4. So I think it goes 2.7, 2.8, 2.9.
You know what my first thought was when I read this headline? That looked like Sark going to the NFL insurance. That's what that looked like. Ooh. Why else would I pay a defensive coordinator $2.7 million? Annually.
Well, you're that desperate?
They weren't, though. They had a top 20 defense last year.
But we all talked about
it. It was top
how,
20 statistically, but it did not feel that way.
No.
It felt like, all right, let's stop calling Simmons today.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it got boiled down. Like, I remember sitting in here when we were prepping
the Vandy
for Texas, and my entire takeaway was, well, the good news is it feels like you only have to stop calling Simmons, but Colin Simmons could also probably beat you by himself at times.
And he did. He won the Vandy game by himself. Yeah.
But that's kind of what it boiled down to last year. And it shouldn't be that way at Texas. It shouldn't be, hey, we just got to keep an eye on this one player.
No, I mean, and it, by the way, Will Muschamp, for yes, he had a 3 to 4 year hiatus from being a defensive coordinator, is one of the most respected minds in defense. Like, is put on Kirby Smart echelon of defensive masterclass. It's a no-brainer. With all the money that you're spending anyways, go out and get the best DC. Hell, you're spending millions of dollars on the players that you hire. Why not get millions of dollars to get the coaches?
I think I got more of a problem with the fact that you don't like going on car rides with me. Is that what I'm saying?
It's not that, dude. It's just...
What's up with this? You guys talking about in the chat, people giving him crap have clearly never rode in the car driven by me.
Hey, man, there's a couple of times where you're like, is he going to stop?
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Are we going to
stay? There was also like one of the most all-time clutch ups in history. Clutch ups.
That was clutch.
So
that
I think one clutching of saving our lives might outweigh the other ones.
You know how people make jokes about when a girl runs over a curb, she's like, oopsie. For Brooks, it's you almost crashed in the car in front of you. It's my bad, boys.
Or when bro's riding the rumble strip for 10 seconds, and you're just in the back. You're in the back trying to type an article, and you're going.
The good thing about road trips is there's always stories. Like they're always memorable.
They're never boring. It's never boring. Like, oh my God.
I will say
this.
I do kind
of
play by three strikes and you're out rule. About the third time I hit the rumble strips, I'll go, all right, that's it. I'll throw the phone up on the window.
No phone.
Yeah.
Gotta lock in real quick.
It will lock the F in for a good 50 miles.
Yeah.
So we're coachable.
Yeah, it works.
Oh yeah,
and we 5 years in, and we good.
Yeah, no, not a scratch.
I can't go to the state of Texas, but other than that, we're good. I can't drive in the state.
You can't get pulled over.
Can't get pulled over.
Yeah, you can.
There we go.
I can go. I can drive. I can't get pulled over.
So next time we go to Texas, rental car might be in someone else's name next time.
You know, we got a lot of Georgia State Patrolmen that listen to the show. Any Texas State Patrolmen out there, your boy could use some help.
No, Will Muschamp did get paid a season.
It's enough for me to say, son, I love you, but I'm not watching any more of your games. I'm gonna head on over to Texas.
It's enough for as a Georgia fan to go, I get it. Okay. I'm really upset Will Muschamp left us, but
now I know why that's a lot of zeros. Make $400K anymore.
It's a lot of money and enough money to look at your son and go, you know, I'm not watching you ride pine. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Son, you're not even playing. Like, it's not even that big of a deal. Y'all going to suck next year, too.
Well, I suffered through
and they
this.
Just signed a five-star, son. You're never getting on the field. You're never getting on the field. I can go somewhere else.
Damn.
Couldn't even bring him with him either.
No, you're not coming either. You're getting that Commodore education, baby.
Staying here.
I can stay right here.
I could see him be like, well, Dad, looks like we're moving to Texas. And we'll just threw his glasses on a chin. Goes,
fucking rat in your pocket?
We.
We.
Brother, I am moving to Texas.
Brother, we are moving to Texas. You are not.
Me and your mom are moving to Texas.
Pick up this box.
With that being said, Jackson Muschamp would have won the 2022 title.
What happened?
I'll say that.
What happened?
Jackson Muschamp would have helped us get a three-peat.
Facts.
No doubt.
I'd trade 2 years of Carson Beck for 1 year of Jackson Muschamp.
I'll trade one season of Stetson Bennett for 30 seconds of Jackson Muschamp being my starting quarterback.
You got that already.
Whoa.
You got more than 30 seconds.
That was a lot.
Starting quarterback.
He's got to be first snap. First guy
I need to hear his name over the loudspeaker and see the graphic on the.
That can't be real.
Oh.
Run a Google.
I'm going to run a Google.
That cannot be real.
What?
Dude, what?
What do they need that for? I thought they had all the Andre Agassi money they could possibly have. Is that real?
Dude.
IMG was taking cartel money.
This is from a news channel in Florida, and the caption of the video says, IMG Academy fined $1.7 million for accepting tuition from families linked to Mexican drug cartel.
Okay.
All right,
okay,
so that's...
So they didn't know.
All right, they weren't taking football money
they
from
were
the
like,
cartel.
Hey, cartel.
All right, that's a little bit different.
That's, we have a son who's linked to whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not
the case. I mean, I bet there's a dozen schools in Florida that have that going on if we really dug through their annals.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Probably.
Thankfully, it doesn't like either, nobody's doing some injustice with the headlines either.
And we talking Mexican cartel or the or
yes,
or the
Mexican
folks,
cartel.
They don't even focus on that white powder. Yeah, Mexican cartel.
Yeah.
It's more of a gang than a drug business.
It's definitely both.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely both. Most pivotal game in 2026. CBS Sports says it's Ole Miss.
I disagree with
And look, I get why it's Ole Miss. Ole Miss ended your season last year. It comes later in the year. It's at a point where it could be the leading up what's happened to it. You need to win that game, but.
Front page of On 3 tomorrow morning. Christian Kirby of the Film Guy Network disagrees with CBS.
Ooh. If On 3's writing articles about me, I'm fine with that.
Bet. I'll let Shannon know.
We're all okay with that, in fact.
I'll fend off some CBS.
In fact, just throw us in as an entire show. Just say, the Film Guy Network says.
Mm. No, but I said it.
FGN says.
I mean, you get three separate articles from us. I mean, that's efficiency right there.
I mean, imagine the aggregation we could have going on.
Mm-hmm.
FGN says. On 3 says FGN says.
Mm.
On SI says that On 3 says that FGN says.
Ooh, I didn't even think about
We're just
this.
Feeding families.
You know? Mm-hmm. It's like that scene in Joe Dirt when he's like, you stick a rocket up a bullfrog's ass and the bullfrog come back to you win twice. You know?
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
But I don't think it's Ole Miss. And I get why they say that, because it is going to be a pivotal game at that point. But it's Alabama until further notice.
I was going to say Alabama, because beating them in the SEC title game, that's definitely like a relief in the sense of this battle that you've had with Alabama of, all right, we got to win back now. We're not on a losing streak anymore. You really want to put it like to rest? Like it's dead now? Beat them in the SEC title game and then walk into their house next season and beat them again.
Walk you a trap.
Not only that, the success or happiness of Georgia fans has been largely dictated by whether or not they beat Alabama if they're on their schedule. If Georgia go back and think of the fan base, what the attitude was around that team in the weeks after Alabama lost. It was, oh my God, fire this player, bench this player, fire this coach. I'm done with this team. This is an embarrassment. I don't even know if Kirby's the guy anymore. I don't trust this staff to win. Like, they were beside themselves after losing to Alabama. They're not going to be beside themselves if they lose to Ole Miss Knox. They'll be unhappy. There will be fire Mike Bobo's galore, but there's not going to be as much of an outrage that takes place if you go into Tuscaloosa and lose. If you go into Tuscaloosa and win, though, we're untouchable. We're going undefeated this year. Like, that is the most pivotal game for Georgia.
And if you really want to get analytical with it, this is a game that is earlier in the season. So, like, if you can make it through that one without taking a scratch mark on your record, that's huge for going into the second part of your season.
I got several nominees here. I mean, the Vandy game's important because Jared Curtis is coming to town.
Yeah.
I mean,
that will be pivotal.
What better moment to make him realize, uh-oh.
Ooh.
Oof. That's a big one from a storyline standpoint. Oh, for sure. I think Florida next year, man. Like,
that's an interesting one.
I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel as Georgia fans, but as someone who covers Georgia, I said it today, and I was on a Florida podcast. I think there were two worst case scenarios for Georgia when that Florida job come open. Worst case scenario number one, Lane Kiffin take that job. Mm-hmm. Seeing Lane Kiffin every single year in Jacksonville would have not gone great. Okay, every single time. That didn't happen, but I thought they hired the second worst case, which was to give Buster Faulkner those players.
Yeah.
Now, for this upcoming season, knowing it's Buster Faulkner calling the plays and knowing what he's been able to do to your defense a couple of times, that's scary. The best part about that news is probably won't be here for very long.
I don't think so.
So
I think Buster puts up 35 points a game for 2 years and then is a big time power forward.
But yeah, certainly going into this year. Now, but I'll say this, like, I would say for the last 2 years, the last two Florida Georgia games, both of those games, I was like, I don't care what Florida's record is. Like, I see that they're talented. I see that they could keep it close to Georgia. And the last 2 years, they have. So it's not going to be a different feeling for me going into this year.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, Florida will get Georgia at some point. That's how rivalries work, even if Georgia on paper is a much better football team. So you're worried coming into this year. Now, some ways to relieve that worry would be that, yes, Buster Faulkner has given Georgia absolute fits. Georgia seemed to have a pretty good answer for that system last year. Now, completely different quarterback that has a completely different skill set, and it's going to be players. a different players. But the 2 years prior, it was like, damn, Georgia Tech's kind of having their way with Georgia. That did not happen last year. So
that Oklahoma defense is pretty concerning.
Yeah, that'll be a really interesting matchup. Yes.
It'll be a litmus test for what you are offensively.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a really good thing you get that one at home this year.
Yeah,
that
will home be, and early.
That will be a – how much can our defense and our crowd affect John Mateer? And can we get John Mateer to give us two scores?
Yeah, how many
times can we get to throw a Swiss cheese sandwich over the middle of the field?
How many times can I get a Pub Sub chicken tender sub thrown over the middle of the
field?
On sale. Hey, give it to me Mike's way, Johnny.
He's prone to do that a couple times.
Give it to me, Mike Slay, John Mateer, over the middle of the field.
But yeah, no, I the Florida game always works. I don't think it's the most pivotal game though, because what?
I'm just laughing at that trend, bro. Hopped on College Football 26, threw a jersey's Mike's number one, Mike Slay, logged off.
It's one of the best trends the internet has created recently. Great.
Who started
that? I don't know.
I think
dude.
It was a former NFL player. I think he's watching the playoffs.
I think it was after a Geno Smith game.
Yeah, I think it was.
Like Geno Smith out here.
Cut the cameras. I don't want to do this episode.
Throwing
anymore.
Footlong subs out here.
Bro, throwing a Subway footlong.
Please save us, Fernando.
In all seriousness, I am on the verge of saying right now in February, I think I might pick Ole Miss to win the league just because of Trinidad and Keewon. But I think 85% of people at SEC Media Day are going to put the weight of expectations on Sark.
Yeah,
probably
Sark's going to get Texas is going to be every SEC favorite to win
probably
everything.
So.
I'm hesitant on Ole Miss because I need to see what play calling looks like.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I think like Keewon Lacy.
You don't think they're that good though? You don't think Trinidad and Keewon can be just
so
good
that,
it doesn't matter?
I think they're that good. I don't know if the system's going to be that good that allows you to go
like here's the
11-1.
Well,
10-10.
Joe Judge is still there, and nobody's getting pregnant in season, so we know that.
that is true.
Like, here's the question. Like, can Joe Judge and the offense continue to hide their deficiencies as well as they have?
Yeah.
That's the bigger question. Like, can you make maybe your lesser-than offensive line not really a factor, continue to do that?
Texas seems like the safest bet to me because it's do the talented players you have deliver? Because if so, my God, you should go 16-0.
Just put all the weight and expectations on Sark.
Let's do it.
What happens.
I'm fine with that.
You are this year's James Franklin. Mm. Just don't go that way. Don't go that way.
What's the equivalent to losing to Northwestern in the SEC?
On their schedule, Mississippi State, if they have them this year. I don't even know if they do. But I don't mean to say – but that's what I felt about Penn State last year. I felt like on paper, if Penn State didn't have national title expectations last year, when were you ever going to do it?
Right.
When were you ever going to think going into the year, our coach better win this year? If you're a Texas fan looking at that roster right now and you don't think that they should guarantee they have to go play for a national title, then I don't know when you're ever going to feel that way about your football team.
If they lose to Mississippi State or Arkansas, that would be the equivalent of what James Franklin
in
did.
Two consecutive weeks.
Okay, well, Arkansas is the second.
Because that's
game.
What it was, right? It was UCLA and then get beat at home by Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, but I don't think it's going to happen this year.
That's fair. I mean,
I think their floor is 9-3.
Yeah, it's safe to say.
And that's a pretty...
And if you're 9-3, I'm going to look at you weird. Because I don't think you should be 9-3 with that roster this year.
No, you should not.
I didn't think you should have been 9-3 last year, but hey, I digress. Appreciate you guys being here. Make sure you hit that thumbs up button on your way out. Love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Actually, I'll see you right now with a Gunnar Stockton film study. How about that?